Welcome to Garden Talk on WPR. I'm Jill Madeau, and we're talking about selecting your Christmas tree on the show today, at least to start out. And our guest is Laura Jull. She is an associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Do you have questions about selecting and caring for your Christmas tree? Well, we'd like to hear from you. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really well, but you know what? I've been seeing Christmas trees for sale already.
Yeah.
Now, it smells good, but what if you buy it now? I mean, don't you have to worry about how long they'll last?
Yeah, that's a great question. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I often cringe seeing Christmas trees offered for sale before Thanksgiving because it's like,
right.
Oh, what happened to Halloween? But, they're starting to become available. The only problem is, will they last through Christmas? And it really depends on how you take care of it. You know, a lot of these Christmas trees, especially if they're coming from out of state, they may be cut several weeks ago, if not longer. And they're sitting out of water. And so one of the best things you can do when you get your Christmas tree is to make a fresh cut, cut at least a couple inches off the base of the trunk, and then put it in a stand that has a reservoir so you can add water. And make sure that water is always there. Freshly cut trees will suck up water very quickly. Trees that were cut a while ago don't uptake water as fast, but it's important to keep that filled with water all the way throughout the holidays. If it dries out and your tree dries out, then it becomes a fire hazard. Not only that, but it becomes a mess.
Oh, yes.
All over your floor.
For sure. What about if you're going to get your tree because you want to have a selection, a bigger selection? You get your tree now, you're not going to put it up for a week or two. Where should you be storing it? And should you make that cut and put it maybe in a bucket of water or something?
I would still make that cut, put it in a bucket of water, and keep your Christmas tree in an unheated garage. Hopefully that doesn't go below freezing too much. The best thing to do is put it up. Even if you don't decorate it, put it up in your home with the water.
Okay.
That would be the best,
mm-hmm.
than to leave it in the garage. But if you absolutely can't do that, then that's an option. But the sooner the better you get it in water.
Okay. And does it matter as far as the variety? You know, I always remember that clip from A Christmas Story where the mom is like, is that one of those trees that loses all its needles? And he says, of course, no, that's them balsams. But does one tree actually shed their needles a little quicker than others?
Yeah, probably one of the best Christmas trees out there are your fir trees, F-I-R, not F-U-R. And fir trees like balsam fir, con color fir, Canaan fir, white fir, all of those make the best Christmas trees. Why? First of all, they retain their needles fairly well as long as there's water in that reservoir. And second, they smell really good. And yes, they're more expensive than some others, but it's worth it.
Okay.
To get a, really nice, healthy, aromatic Christmas tree in your home really helps you welcome the holidays. Now, there are some other types of Christmas trees. Of course, there's white pine, and white pine can be a nice Christmas tree. It can shed some needles. I'm not going to say it doesn't. All of them can. I mean, there's...
Oh, sure.
If they get too dry, they can shed their needles. I personally would stay away from spruce trees. I know some people might hate me for saying that, but in my experience, spruce trees, first of all, they're kind of prickly.
Yes.
Hard to decorate. And second of all, they dry out fairly quickly in the home. And then it becomes this huge pile of needles on your carpet. They can be pretty trees as Christmas trees. I'm not saying they can't be. It just, you really got to watch the watering and make sure it doesn't dry out.
Mm-hmm. And we tend to forget about that while we're doing all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
What about cutting your own? I know there's places where you can go out and cut your own. Do you have any tips for doing that?
Yeah. Well, I've done this. It's the freshest tree you can get.
Right.
It's fresh cut. And you, again, take it home, do another fresh cut at home, put it in that stand with water. The only problem is these things are heavy. And I've had to personally drag mine.
Yes, done it myself.
Yeah, by myself through the nursery. And then you have to have help tying it to the roof of your car. I mean, mm-hmm. it's
yes.
really difficult. I'm sure a lot of guys could do it, but myself, I needed help. And then you want to make sure it's really tight to the top of your car. Otherwise, it'll fly off.
Which would be bad.
On the road.
And I would imagine that people tend to buy trees, especially out in, you know, where you cut them your own, that are too tall.
Yeah.
Is there a good way of putting a too tall tree into your house? Just hack it off on the bottom? Is that the best way
yeah,
to do it?
That's basically, if it's too tall, you would have to remove more of the bottom of the trunk and the lower branches, which is, you know, you paid for this big tree.
Right.
So I would recommend you do you know, some type of measurement in your home to see how tall your ceiling is where you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure the tree you buy can actually fit.
Yes.
Because you don't want to cut it from the top of the tree. That will look ridiculous.
I had an uncle that used to do that every year, and we would laugh. He'd cut from the top if it didn't fit. What about the kind of stand that you use? Are some better than others?
You know, anything that has you know, can hold up to a, you know, a gallon of water is what you want, you know. Anything, you know, a half gallon, gallon size reservoir, you know, trees can suck up a half a gallon a day if they're thirsty enough. I would say something that holds a fair amount of water. There's metal, there's plastic, it doesn't really matter. You want a base that's heavy enough to hold the tree up, first of all. Second of all, you want, you know, the four sides of your stand, like an X, going out to balance the weight.
Right. And you'll know right away if it's not going to balance it, because it will fall
right.
over.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard all kinds of tips and things about adding stuff to water to help the trees stay fresh longer. Do we need to do any of that?
No.
Okay.
No. You know, they go, oh, I put sugar in there, it helps. You know, plants naturally produce their own sugar
mm-hmm.
through photosynthesis. So adding sugar, totally unnecessary. You know, it's uptaking water, and that's the most important thing we need to add. You don't need to add bleach. You don't need to add pop or anything like that to the water. Just plain old tap water is fine.
Okay, great. We've got a call from Chad in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, Chad.
Hello. I just wanted to comment that our family for three or four years have purchased potted trees, and we just keep them alive through the winter, and then we plant them in the spring.
Where do you put them after Christmas? You keep them in your home, or do you put them in your garage?
Yeah, we keep them upstairs in a big sunny window and keep them watered, and we've had good luck. We've got Norway spruce, Colorado spruce. So we've got kind of, we can kind of look around our yard and say, oh, that was Christmas of, you know, 2019. And so kind of fun memories.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, that's a neat way of doing it. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Though a blue spruce in particular is really, really sharp to decorate.
Right,
Their needles are like hypodermic needles. They're very, very sharp. But, yeah, if you can find trees that are still, you know, growing in pots this time of year available, a lot of nurseries have packed them away into storage for winter. So they're not as readily available as, say, cut trees.
Mm-hmm. And just as a reminder, Norfolk Island pine, which a lot of people use for Christmas, is an indoor plant. So don't put it outside. I think
Norfolk Island pines are wonderful houseplants. I have one, mm-hmm. but it's a tropical, not a, it's subtropical pine.
Right.
It's not even a pine. It's in a different genus altogether. But yeah, that one is strictly indoors.
Yeah. So don't make that mistake.
Bright.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very bright.
Bright sunny window for that.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Now, in Chad's case, if it was somebody who maybe didn't have a nice bright area to put it, would it be okay to put it in a garage that doesn't get too cold?
Well, since it's actively growing in a pot, I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
Now that I think about it, I probably wouldn't because it's not dormant. It's actively growing, and putting it in a garage may not be the best option.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. All right. Well, kind of getting off the subject a little bit, Robert emailed. He is interested in planting an oak tree after reading books from Doug Talmay, but they have a small yard in Madison with three existing maples. Are there smaller oak species that are good for the Madison area?
Not really.
Yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah, but there are columnar forms of oak that are available on the market that mm-hmm. grow upright, kind of a fastigiate or upright form. And they're very narrow. There's a bunch of them on the market. There's one, and I love this marketing name. I think a woman might have come up with this one. The trademark name is called Skinny Jeans.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
Isn't that great?
I love it. Yep.
Yeah. That's one. There's also Crimson Spire is another one.
Yeah, yep, I have that one.
They're available.
Yeah, that Crimson yeah. Spire is one I have, and it's still fairly small, but the color on the leaves are beautiful.
Yeah,
so,
fall color is nice mm-hmm. on that one in particular.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, good luck, Robert, but just, take a little look, see what's out there. We've got a call from Jean in Milwaukee. Hi, Jean.
Yes, hi. I have a story. I like Fraser's because they keep the needles, Fraser firs, and I heard that if you keep your tree till spring, the needles fall off, and it's nice to have your beans grow off the tree with the branches. Well, I took my tree out, kept it out all winter. Spring rolled arrived. The needles were still on.
Oh,
it was pretty funny. Wow. So the whole winter, not a needle. It was green, and the needles were still on.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's a great way to provide some habitat for birds is take your Christmas. Everybody puts it to the curb. I don't. I just put mine outside take the decorations and lights off. But then I put it outside as is, and birds will and other small animals will come and nest in there during the winter. Not only that, when spring comes, I then cut the branches off and saw the trunk into pieces. And boy, oh boy, does that make a nice fire outside, a little campfire outside. I have a fire pit. And I always love burning the firs because, first of all, they're extremely flammable when they're all dried out.
Oh, yeah.
They light up mm-hmm. very fast and very brightly. And then the fire smells great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to recycle it. Last year, didn't somebody, like with Olbrich, use some of the discarded Christmas trees to make a maze? Are they doing that again this year?
I don't know. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It was.
Do.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. So I'm sure we'll hear about it if that's the case, but it'll probably be further on into the season. We've got an email from Justin. He has some super old nine-bark shrubs that he wants to rehab. How far can he or should he cut them back? And is there any root maintenance or splitting fertilizer, whatever he needs to do with that?
No, it sounds like he's just got some overgrown nine bark. And what I would recommend, and I've done this with mine, is when they start to get really old and kind of lanky, is you cut them back in the late winter, like March, April, to about 6 inches or so from the base of the plant, from the ground. And then it will resprout. And it'll be kind of spindly looking the first year. But within a year or two, they come back and they look great. And actually, that's a wonderful way of reinvigorating some plants. And not all plants you can do this to. It's only certain kinds of shrubs. And, forsythias, spireas, And nine bark are examples of plants you can do that to. And some hydrangeas, not all.
Right. That's the key, is knowing what kind you have on that one.
Yep.
We're talking with Laura Gell. She is a professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Joining the conversation, we have open lines, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us every Friday or listen again on Saturday mornings at 6. And you can also go online and listen to our archives at any time. So any topic, just type it in search and you can find it. Coming up next week, we'll talk to Lisa Johnson about what you can compost from your vegetable garden yet and how to prepare your garden for winter. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, we're talking to Laura Gell, and we're talking about Christmas trees, but we can certainly talk about other tree and shrub questions, so give us a call. Again, 800-642-1234. So some of us, Laura, I'm not saying who, but we like to do a little pruning on our own evergreens to make wreaths and garlands and stuff. Is this a problem for the trees, or is there a way we should be doing that?
It's not a problem for the trees to take a few branches off for wreaths or other decorations. Obviously, you don't want to take all the foliage off.
Right.
But, you know, make sure you're using a good pair of sharp pruners. You want, you know, the bypass type of pruners, the ones where the blades bypass each other like a pair of scissors, but don't use scissors. Scissors don't cut woody stems very well. And you want to take it back to a node or a side branch or to a side bud. There's many different plants you can use for decorations. And examples of good ones that I like to get are, of course, white pine, very soft.
Yes.
You could get firs. Any type of fir tree is good. Some pines. I like pine cones, especially in decorations. And of course, some plant that you may or may not be familiar with is our native winterberry.
Yes.
It's also called Michigan holly when I lived in Michigan. nobody here calls it that.
No, of course not.
It's a winterberry. It's our native plant that has bright red fruit, or orange or yellow, depending on the cultivar. You need both a male and female plant to get the fruit.
Okay.
If you can get branches of that, even at the local market, they make wonderful, colorful additions to a wreath or to a swag.
You know what I like using is cedar or like arborvitae.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot that one.
Yeah.
That's another really nice one. It smells great.
It does. And putting all of those together makes such a beautiful display. They're gorgeous.
Yes.
So, yeah. As far as, like, we were talking about wreaths and garlands and stuff, is there any special care that we need for those?
No, just make sure they're fresh, obviously. They're not going to be in water, so they do dry out faster. Some people mist them with water every now and then. I don't know if that really does anything because there's no roots to uptake the water, but it could actually keep the humidity high around the actual greens, might help a little bit. Keep it away from drafts and especially the heat vents in your home, because that will dry out the foliage very quickly.
That's true with the Christmas trees too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. You are part of you actually run, don't you, the Woody Perennial Program at UW. Tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do there.
Well, I'm the only person.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're everybody.
Yeah. And that is basically just me. And my responsibilities are teaching courses. I teach several different courses at UW-Madison in the Department of Horticulture, which is going to be changing names to a new department this summer. Make a long story short, it won't be the Department of Horticulture anymore. But I also am a state extension specialist for woody ornamentals. I program for my green industry as well as all the Wisconsin county agents and educators. I put on programs. I speak a lot throughout the state and area. on various woody ornamental topics. I write publications. I am on the radio. I've been on the TV. That pretty much sums me up.
Well, gee, that's hardly anything.
Yeah, a lot of disease.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, we've got a call from Lisa in Madison. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I have a question about poinsettias. I have mine from last year that I kept alive, believe it or not, for the last year.
Wow.
And, yeah, but the leaves are green. They're not turning color and they're not turning red. I'm just wondering if there's something I could do or is it kind of
Yeah. That's a good question. It's amazing. Yours still looks good. That's great. Yeah, in order for those, it's actually not flowers. It's the very top leaves that turn red. The actual true flowers of a poinsettia are those little yellow nubby things right at the top
right.
of the flower. And in order to get the color to change, it's in response to light levels. And if it's in a home where lights are turned on and off, you're not giving it the dark light treatment that it needs in order to initiate the bracts to turn color. And it doesn't happen overnight. This is a long process over many weeks to get that plant to turn red. And what some people do is they put it, you know, they have the plant out in the house and then they put it in the closet for at least 12 hours and don't open that closet door because that breaks the dark cycle. And over time, it will slowly turn red, but I don't think it's going to be ready for Christmas. Some other people put it in a room that most people don't go into to turn on the lights, but you know, it's not easy to turn them red if there's any type of artificial light around. I think it's 12 hours dark. Maybe it's more than 12 hours. Maybe it's 14 hours of dark. And the plants are native to Mexico, by the way, and they grow like shrubs. And with the changing of the year with the light levels outside, Mother Nature does that for it. You know, you have, 8-9 hours of light, and then it's in the dark, and it naturally turns that color there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. You got it to survive, but it really is kind of tricky to get them to get red again. So good luck.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lisa. And we've got Katie in Sugar Camp with a comment. Hi, Katie.
Good morning. I hope this isn't something that's already been covered because I only tuned in a few minutes ago. But I just wanted to remind listeners not to do something really stupid, which I did in my younger years. My mother gave me the task of taking all of the Christmas decorations off of our Christmas tree and then dragging the tree outside. And bear in mind, I grew up in Southern California. So by the time I took all of the decorations off, the tree was quite dry. And I thought to my 14-year-old self, well, this is silly. Why drag it all the way out to the yard when I can just stick the whole tree up the chimney?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, did you get in trouble, Katie?
No, I didn't. When I lit the match, you cannot believe how quickly it was just a tinder box and it went up in seconds.
Oh,
and our entire house stuck. My mother came running in and she said, What happened? And by then, of course, the fire had died down to just a little tree. And I just said, I don't know.
Oh, that's a great story, Katie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, don't put it in your fireplace. Oh, my gosh. You know, when you're 14, you have everything figured out and you know exactly what you're supposed to do. Adults are so stupid when you're that age, right? Oh, thanks, Katie. If you've got a question for Laura, give us a call. The lines are open, 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email, and that's send it to ideas@WPR.org, and we have a couple of those. A listener called but couldn't stay with us, and they're wondering if you can take Christmas trees across state lines or if there are any invasive that they have to worry about. Great question.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head because these are not, there's no roots. And these are cut trees. So I don't think so. In terms of invasive evergreens, there's only one that I know of, and that is Scots pine or Scotch pine. And again, without roots, it, you know, it's not going to be invasive. So I don't foresee that being a problem either. There are some decorations that you should be aware of that you might want to avoid. And one of them is Celastris scannins are American, actually are the Celastris orbiculatus, which is known as the Oriental bittersweet. It has fruit, and the birds can eat the fruit, fly away, and deposit the seed. It's an invasive species. So that's something to be aware of. Also, if there's last year, or was it the year before, there was some imported greens that came from, I don't know what state, that were sold at garden centers, and they had invasive insect on it. And that's something you don't want to repeat. I can't remember the name of the plant off the top of my head. I'm drawing a blank. But, you know, it's best if you're decorating your trees or wreaths, use either, you know, artificial things that you buy at the store, or if you're putting green stuff in there, just get it from your yard or native woods. It's best to just use local stuff.
Yeah,
and
that,
it's fresher.
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. Let's go to the phones. Peter in Mequonico. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Hi, what can we help you with?
You were talking about winterberry shrubs before, and my question is about how do you, like, order or purchase a male versus a female plant?
Yeah, good question. Good question. Well, one of the things is labels, and reputable nurseries will have their plants labeled, and you want to make sure to get a male cultivar of winterberry that actually flowers at the same time as the female cultivar. The reason why I say that is there's various male cultivars that flower at the same time as the earlier flowering, up to a week or two earlier than other female cultivars that flower about a week or two later. And so for the earlier ones, I think it's earlier, and that one is called Jim Dandy, Jim, J-I-M, and then Dandy. Now, that one pollinates smaller ones like Red Sprite, which is a female. Now, for the later flowering ones, and they flower in the summer, by the way, or late spring, that one is called Southern Gentleman, and that is a male. That's a bigger plant than Jim Dandy. About three times the size, and that one pollinates some of the larger, taller, later blooming female cultivars. Like, there's so many of them on the market. There's Winter Red and so on. And that right there is really important, that you get the right male to pollinate the right female at that time in spring.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Peter. And then we've got from Grafton, Nancy has got a question for us. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hello. I have a Christmas cactus, and I bet you any money that if I had it someplace where it was dark more often, maybe it would blossom. But it's in a living room, and right across the room, outside, the street light. And the street light's on all night long. So I bet you that's my problem.
Yep. I have the same plant at home. And actually, I call them my Halloween cactus because one of them's already done flowering. And my other one is flowering right now. And what I did is, they used to be in my kitchen and they never flowered. And I said, you know, and I knew why, because you have to have uninterrupted nights without any light at all. So I decided to put them in my back bathroom, and the only time I go in the bathroom, obviously, is to use it. And at night, I have the light on just for a few minutes, and then I go to bed. And just by moving that plant to that room, both of them flowered for me, like almost instantly. I was very, very happy about that.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
Yeah. Well, thank you for questioning that, Nan, or asking that question. We get a lot of Christmas cactus questions on this show. So,
yeah.
But I have to tell you, I've got a Christmas cactus in my kitchen, and I have a little herb grower thing with a light, and the light comes on at night. But my cactus is blooming right now.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Interesting.
I want to mention about the care of Christmas cactus.
Yeah.
When they're actually flowering, you want to keep the soil moderately moist. Otherwise, it'll drop its buds.
That makes sense.
After it's done flowering, you want to treat it like a cactus and not water it very often because they'll rot if you keep them too wet.
Right. Yeah. Great. Thank you for giving that info for us. Up next, we've got Tom in La Crosse. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Love your show here. And I'm just wondering if you had any recommendation as far as creating a privacy fence naturally, so to speak, like with the, I don't know if it would be arborvitaes or what those bushes are that grow nice and green and fairly tall. I've seen them, you know, just a few feet tall, and then I've seen them up to close to 12 feet tall, I guess. But I'm wondering if you would have a recommendation, and then also how far apart to plant them.
Well, arborvitae make excellent screening hedges. Now, I have to ask you this. Do you have deer?
Very, very few.
Okay. And the reason why I ask is they will nibble it. Arborvitae is one of their favorite things to eat, and they'll get on their back legs and they'll strip all the foliage off from as far as they can reach with their on their back hind legs down to the ground. That doesn't mean the plant's dead. It'll re-leaf back slowly, but do be aware of that. Arborvitae, there's lots of different cultivars of arborvitae. There are some that are short, and there's some that are actually little shrubs all the way up to big trees. And some of the most common cultivars are like Nigra, there's Het's Wintergreen, there's Techne. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different ones. So you'd obviously, if you want it for screening, you want something that's going to get big. How far apart do you plant them? It depends on the cultivar. Some cultivars get wider than others. Some are tall and skinny, and you can plant them a little bit closer. But one of the biggest things that I see is people plant them almost directly next to each other. Like there is no space in between. And what's going to happen is those shrubs are going to grow and start to shade each other out, and you're going to get a bunch of brown leaves in the middle. So, you know, have several feet in between each plant. They're going to, you know, fill in, but slowly. It depends on how quick of a fill you want. But do realize there needs to be, you know, some space in between these shrubs.
Okay. And what about protecting them in the winter? Because I've seen so many arborvitae that don't make it.
Yeah. And that often is the case, one, for newly planted material. You know, arborvitae, I mean, any evergreen, they've got their leaves there and the ground is frozen and the plants are still losing water because the leaves are present. And so having your trees and evergreens in particular well watered before the ground freezes is really important, especially for newly planted materials. Now, I don't do that for my established stuff unless there's been a very bad fall drought. And we've had, you know, recently we've had a lot of moisture, but this fall was rather on the dry side. So anything that's newly planted, you want to keep it watered until the ground freezes and then stop. I do not recommend using wilt-proof or any of those spray-on products. what those do is they help reduce evapotranspiration. The only problem is you got to reapply them, and they're not 100% effective. You know, wrapping in burlap, do not wrap any evergreen tightly with burlap. The plant needs to breathe, and what some people do is they put up barriers. They put up those, you know, 6 to 8 foot tall stakes, mm-hmm. and they put them around the evergreens, but not wrapping the evergreens like a mummy. That's not necessary, and actually can be more harmful. Leave the top of the plant open. You don't want to completely shade it. But to be honest, I don't think that's necessary. Winter burn is another issue, even on established plants. Things like yews and hemlocks, which are shade loving, those should not be out. Exposed sites or in winter sun and winter wind can really desiccate the foliage. Arborvitae can suffer winter burn. There are some cultivars that are more susceptible than others. Techne is a really good one. It does not winter burn as quickly as some of the old cultivars. Again, keeping your plants watered, very critical.
Okay, thanks for that question, Tom. Next, we'll go to Green Bay. And Lee, you have a question.
Yeah, good morning. Here's another question on arborvitaes. I'd like to know if Laura is familiar with the common name green giant and an
yes.
arborvitae. And is it a little more resistant to deer feeding on it? And will it tolerate in a protected area in a zone 4?
Okay. I'm very familiar with green giant. We had it in when I did my graduate work down south. That was a common landscape shrub. It's a hybrid. And it is borderline hardy. It can does fine here in Madison, zone 5. Zone 4, you're pushing it for hardiness. And you, I don't know if it will survive or not. In a protected location, it might. In terms of deer browsing, you know, the that one as well as some of the Thuja placata, which is the western red cedar or giant arborvitae, that's supposed to be less susceptible to deer browsing. But I can tell you from the arboretum here, they were eating it. So deer are hungry enough, they'll eat it. they're less susceptible, but I'm not going to say they're immune. If you want to prevent deer browsing, you know, junipers are better than arborvitae for. But again, if they're hungry enough, they'll eat anything.
Okay, thank you, Lee. Laura, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I've heard that the cedar tree, which is similar to the arborvitae, I assume, it actually, there's a chemical change during the winter that makes it more, it makes it better for people, or for the deer to eat it, that they enjoy it more. It tastes better to them. Have you heard that?
Kind of a common name. It can refer to arborvitae, it can refer to junipers,
okay.
It can refer to a bunch of other different plants. It's kind of like maple, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, I have not heard that about the taste change in arborvitae. That's a new one for me. Interesting.
Yeah, you never know. I probably read on the internet, so.
Yeah.
Our guest on Garden Talk today is Laura Gell. She is a professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Join in with your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us on Monday when we talk to our physical therapist about managing chronic lower back pain. That's Monday on the Ideas Network. Right now, we have got Laura Gell with us, and we're taking questions about woody ornamentals. So let's go back to the phone. Kelly in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. I have several dapple willow bushes that we planted to create a natural fence. They're about 3 years old, and they're tall, but I would like them to dense up. Is it okay to cut them back this time of year, and how far can I cut them back in order for them to dense up? Also, the rabbits really enjoyed them when we planted them, so if I'm cutting them way back, are they going to still enjoy them, or are they too old for them to like?
All rabbits will eat anything. they don't care how old it is. Dappled willow, you mean like the variegated one?
Yes.
It's white and green leaves, yeah. With willows in particular, just like with forsythias and a few other plants, you can cut them back pretty hard to within a couple inches from the ground, and they will, you know, leave some buds behind, and those little stubs with buds will sprout in spring, and they will come back big time, and they will fill in quite nicely. If they get too tall and lanky, you can cut the stems back, you know, halfway or so. The buds will break. But realize, you know, where you cut it back to, that's where the branching will occur. But if you want more branching towards the base of the plant, with that particular willow, you're going to need to cut it back every few years pretty hard and let it resprout, and then it'll get bushier at the base. They need full sun, that particular cultivar.
Okay, thank you very much, Kelly. Next up is Linda in Madison. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm wondering about taking care of blue spruce trees. I work at a place doing gardening where it's just a whole lot of blue spruce trees, and most of them have, you know, a fair amount of dead branches on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, blue spruce, I don't recommend planting blue spruce in Wisconsin. It's also known as Colorado spruce or Colorado blue spruce. And the reason why, Brian Huddleston, if you're listening, this is probably one of his biggest, most common samples that are sent into the plant disease diagnostic lab. It is so disease prone, and they're short-lived in our climate. It's just too humid for it. Where it grows in Colorado is, you know, dry conditions in the humidity-wise in the summer. Here, it's so humid, and the plants are very dense. And there's a couple of diseases. One's called rhizosphera, needle blight, and, of course, cytospora canker, as well as other diseases. It's kind of a poster child for plant pathology. But those lower branches, I can almost guarantee you have some sort of disease, maybe cytospora canker. Those lower branches will lose their needles, and it will slowly move up the tree, and you'll have very few branches on the lower part. So removing those branches is very important. Clean your pruners, and don't try to compost that diseased material. The spores are in the air. You know, get some air circulation underneath those spruce trees. Add mulch to the base of the tree, just not touching the trunk. Keep it away from the trunk. You know, it's going to be a management issue. That's why I don't recommend blue spruce, because they're just high maintenance, you know, in terms of diseases, and they eventually look so bad, people just cut them down.
Right.
It's not a good choice for Wisconsin.
No, and they were so popular for a while.
They still are.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of dead ones.
Yep, for sure. Well, thank you, Linda, and good luck with that. We had Pat emailed us, and they have a witch hazel shrub that is 14 years old. What pruning tips are there, and what time of year should it be pruned?
Well, that depends on which type of witch hazel it is. There's two types that we typically see in Wisconsin. Our native one, which is the common witch hazel, that blooms in the fall. Actually, it starts to bloom in October, and it blooms throughout November. And you may even have a few flowers still left on it. That one, you wait and prune in the early spring before it sets flower buds for the following fall. The other one that is grown in Wisconsin is called the vernal witch hazel, and there are hybrids out there as well. But the vernal witch hazel and the hybrids, they bloom in March, very early, March to April, as soon as we get some warm days in spring. And I've even seen them pop bud in February, and those are really fragrant. They come in different colors besides yellow, and those you want to prune after flowering. So once they're done flowering, like in May, you know, they should be done by then you can prune them. But if you cut them now, the ones that bloom in the spring, you are removing flower buds. Not that that's a bad thing, because, you know, winter is the best time to prune anything because you can see what you're doing.
Yeah.
But do realize you're cutting off flower buds for the spring blooming ones,
mm-hmm.
but not for our native one. Those bloom in the fall.
Now, is that one of those shrubs that you can cut wade back and have it come?
No.
Okay.
No.
So how do you prune
not,
that?
Yeah, you do not want to cut witch hazels all the way down to the ground. They're slower growing, and especially our native one, they grow like a tree. And they're a multi-branched tree / very large shrub. They can get 15 feet tall and wide easily.
Wow.
And so you don't want to prune much, to be honest. You know, maybe just, you know, if you want to take branches and bring them in your house
in the middle of March for ones that bloom in the spring. You can do that, and they will. You can force them into bloom in your home, but not the common or native one, because that one blooms in the fall. Same with the vernal witch hazel. You do not want to be cutting these things way back. They won't come back very well.
Okay.
It's slower growing.
Great. Thanks for that question, Pat. Let's go back to the phones. Mike in Algoma has a question. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning. Another arborvitae question. I live where there are dozens, hundreds of white cedars growing. And walking through them the other day, I came across one, which instead of being the nice deep green, is a copper or a bronze color. And it's not the dead leaves. It's definitely growing leaves which have a different color. Have you mm-hmm. run into that before?
It could be a cultivar. There's a newer cultivar called Jantar that kind of turns that color in the wintertime. That's one possibility. The other possibility is the tree is dying. And they will retain their needles, and they'll turn brown, and then eventually they'll dry up and drop. So it really depends on if it's a cultivar or it's a plant that's dying.
Thanks, Mike. Without
seeing it, I can't tell.
Sure. Rich in West Bend, you're up next.
Good morning. Question for your guest regarding winter storage of Weigelia and burning bushes. I've got two plants of each that I purchased at the end of the season, which is a good time to buy, but I can't get them in now until spring. In the meantime, mm-hmm. I have heaped them in their plastic containers. They're probably 3-gallon plastic containers. I've heaped them up with wood chips entirely around them. Would it be better to take them out of the plastic containers until spring and leave them piled with wood chips?
Okay, that's a good question. I've, too, have some shrubs that I didn't get into the ground soon enough. And I've done this before. I put them in my unheated garage. I water them well, make sure they don't dry out inside your garage, water them well, and they'll survive the winter in a garage. And Weigelia especially, that's a very nice shrub. I just want to mention one thing about burning bush. Burning bush is really invasive, and I do not recommend planting burning bushes anymore. And it's not just me. I mean, you know, who am I? It's on the invasive plant list for many states. It produces little orange capsule fruit and bright red seeds that the birds eat. They fly away, and they deposit the seed into our woodlands. And if you don't believe me, I've got pictures of woodlands that were a complete understory of burning bush choking out all our native spring ephemerals and spring flowers that they couldn't come up because it was so shaded and dense because of non-native burning bush. That's a plant that we really should be phasing out of production and out of landscapes. There's a number of alternatives, and probably one of the best ones, if anybody's interested, is our native black chokeberry or aronia, A-R-O-N-I-A, native black chokeberry. There are dwarf cultivars of that on the market that don't get as big. The straight species can get, you know, 8-10 feet tall of black chokeberry, but some of these newer ones like ground hugger, there's also I'm trying to think of the name of it. I see the plant and I'm drawing a blank. Iroquois Beauty is another dwarf. There's a number of them, newer ones on the market. They have phenomenal fall color, white flowers in spring, followed by very black fruit in the fall. It feeds wildlife. You can actually eat the fruit. They're extremely bitter, but it's actually a fruit crop in a number of countries, and they use it to increase the vitamin C and antioxidant concentrations in many of our juices, like cranberry juice or, jellies. Aronia jelly is delicious. Again, a lot of sugar is added.
Right.
But that's a good alternative shrub for burning bush. I just wanted to say that. I'm sorry you have one, you want to say that, and I understand that, sir. But I'm just trying to encourage our listeners to not plant any more burning bush.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Laura, because I was going to mention it too. It just is not a good one to plant. Now, I bought one of those choke cherries, and it did feed wildlife, my rabbits in my yard. It does not look very good right now.
I have two dogs, so that, you know, to kind of keep the rabbits at bay.
Well, I've got one, but he doesn't get off the leash, so the rabbits know how far he can go. That's how that works.
Yeah, mine too.
Let's go to an email here before we have to break. Pete in Reedsburg wants to know if you have any updated information about the advance of boxwood blight in Wisconsin.
It's bad. It's here.
Okay.
I know Brian Huddleston, his lab, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison, does tests for that very pathogen. And there are other alternatives out there. You know, again, like these dwarf black chokeberries is an alternative. If depending on where you are in the state, if you're towards Milwaukee area, you can also use inkberry, I-N-K, like inkberry, and that one is black fruit. And that can be used in zone 5B and warmer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that question, Pete. Our guest today on Garden Talk is Laura Gell. She is a professor and extension specialist on woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Stay with us. There's always more to come on the Ideas Network. This is Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jill Nadeau. Our guest is Laura Gell. She is a professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. What questions do you have for her? Shrubs, trees, vines, houseplants? She can answer any of those. So give us a call. The number 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And I just want to remind everyone that we are partnering with UW-Madison's Extension Horticulture Program to learn more about your experience listening to Garden Talk. So we'd love to find out what you learned during the show and how you'll put it to use, and maybe some ideas for future Garden Talk topics. All you have to do is go to WPR.org/Larry. You click on today's show note, and underneath that, you're going to see a link. It doesn't take very long to do. It's pretty short, so we really appreciate your feedback on that. So, Laura, we should just go right back to the phones, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Barbara in Glenbeulah, what's your question or comment?
Hi. I just have a comment about raising Christmas cactuses or Thanksgiving cactuses, actually, as mine is. I care for it in a very non-traditional way. In springtime, I will take the plant and put it outside in a protected southern exposure that gets dappled light. Forget about it the entire summer other than splashing some water on it once in a while during a drought. And in fall, when it comes time to bring in my other tender bulbs and other plants, I will retrieve it, and it will be full of blossoms. Now, this comes at a cost because when I bring it in, I feel so guilty, like I have abused a child. And I think I will be reported to the Plant Humane Society.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it is, you know, put your Christmas cactus, Thanksgiving cactus outside in the summer, but out of direct sun because it's been growing in your house. And you put it immediately into direct sun, it could burn. So filtered sunlight is best. And then, you know, later on, before it gets temperatures below 40 degrees, definitely bring it in your house by then. At the latest, 50 would be more like it. And then put it in a room and enjoy the blooms.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us, Barbara. Let's go to Ron in La Crosse next. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I have a suggestion and a question. Suggestion is, my mother used to tell me her father would buy a cheaper evergreen for a Christmas tree, and if it had some bare spots, wasn't full, he'd take a hand crate drill, drill some holes in the trunk, and stick extra branches into it.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you had one other comment, Ron?
Yeah, I have one comment. The other thing is, a question really is, I get water from my furnace. It collects in a condensate pump, which pumps it to a pot, and I save it. I was told that water is sort of on the acidic side. Now, knowing Christmas trees, evergreens prefer acidic soil, would that water be good to be used in a tray for a Christmas tree since it is also acidic?
Well, do you know for sure it's acidic?
Well,
see, the reason why I say that is, you know, you don't know what's in that condensation water. It could be some salts, if any salts build up in your system. I don't know. I just use fresh tap water myself, and it doesn't have to be an acidic water for your trees. I mean, the trees are already dead. You've cut off the roots, and so you're just trying to keep those that foliage on the plant, and just regular tap water is all you need.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Next up, Scott in Madison. Hi, Scott.
Afternoon. I have pine trees that are a fantastic wind block to the north, and I need something for understory because the lower limbs are beginning to show their age. Any of the yews that would be able to grow from probably 5 to 6 foot?
And these are white pines, right, Scott?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. I always have to ask this. Do you have a lot of deer?
Zero.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, he's in Madison, so.
Okay. Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, there's places in Madison where
there are
a lot of deer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the reason why I say that is because yews are the second favorite thing that deer like to eat after arborvitae or white cedar. Yes, yews can be grown underneath white pines as long as there's, you know, some dappled sunlight reaching them. Yews do like to be out of the winter winds, out of the winter sun, because they are prone to winter burn, and they should be planted in some partial shade or shade. That is the one evergreen that does not want to be out in the full hot baking sun all day long. In terms of growing 5 to 6 feet, there's so many cultivars on the market for yews. One that gets a little bit bigger is called, well, there's Hixii, but there's a better one, Tautoni. Tautoni. And Tautoni is one that gets a little bit bigger. There's also a number of them from, you know, proven winners that get taller. You want to make sure it's a cultivar that gets at least 5 feet tall. Otherwise, most of the cultivars are smaller because they're grown as, like, you know, filler plants that only get about 3 to 4 feet in height. So you want to get something that's going to be bigger, obviously. And, you know, Everlow is a nice one, but that one, you know, that's about 4 feet, maybe. And that one's winter burn, very winter burn resistant, Everlow. And that's a nice cultivar. You obviously don't want to get them too tall where they start growing into the branches of the white pine. So, just, you know, go to your local garden center and look for cultivars that get bigger.
Thank you very much.
Right now is not the time to look for them.
Right. Yes. A few more months yet. Thanks, Scott, for that question. Susan in La Crosse, you're up next.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hello. I was wondering if you'd ever heard of the cultivar Fat Bob as a spruce.
Fat Bob?
Fat Bob. It was supposed to be a short, fat, little spruce tree, and they're huge.
Well, I know of Fat Albert, which is a cultivar of blue spruce. I've seen that one, but I've not seen, was it Fat, what's the name? Fat Bob?
No,
I'm not
Bob?
Sure.
Yeah, Fat Bob.
I'm not, Yeah, I'm not familiar with Fat Bob, but Fat Albert I have seen, and yes, it does get tall and big. You know, dwarf conifers, and I'm a huge fan of dwarf conifers. They're low maintenance, easy peasy plants to grow, but they're dwarf in the sense that they're smaller than the straight species that can, say, you know, get 40, 50 feet tall. Dwarf doesn't mean tiny. It could just means that it puts on, you know, 6 to 12 inches of growth a year instead of the usual. And the plants, I've seen dwarf blue spruce that were 20 feet tall, like Montgomery blue spruce, which is supposed to be a smaller one. That one can get up to 20 feet tall. So do be aware, dwarf doesn't necessarily mean small. If you really want a small blue spruce that stays small, there's one called St. Mary's Broom. And that one grows almost like a ground cover. That's a very short one. And it's beautiful. But do realize blue spruce, very disease prone.
Okay. Well, thank you, Susan, for that question. If you've got a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take an email. John emailed, last year he had 6 large blue spruce removed. Some were dead and others were dying at his house in Brookfield. Now they need to screen out their neighbor's untidy yard. Would Black Hill spruce trees be a good choice to replace them? And is it okay to plant them in the same area that the disease trees were? They do have a lot of deer in the area, so he knows that arborvitae wouldn't be a good idea. Also, his neighbor has apple trees, so juniper isn't an option either.
Right. That's good to know. Black Hill spruce, Norway spruce, any of them can get the same diseases as blue spruce. So they're not immune. In fact, even here at the Arboretum, the Black Hill spruces are just about defoliated from the same diseases that blue spruce. We used to recommend the Black Hill spruce as an alternative to blue spruce, but we're seeing the same diseases. Ask Brian Hoddleston, he'll tell you the same thing. And, you know, the spruces, if you had to go with a spruce, I would recommend Serbian spruce, and that is Picea, which is a genus, P-I-C-E-A, and then the scientific epithet is called Omorica, O-M-O-R-I-K-A, or just ask for Siberian spruce. Now, that can get foliar diseases, but much less susceptible. I've got my neighbor decided to plant a blue spruce right next to my berm, which I'm not happy about because it's full of disease. And that same disease has spread to my concolor fir, which is a very nice tree. I've never seen any disease on it until she planted that doggone blue spruce. And it's just serving as an inoculum. But my Serbian spruce is totally fine, but it's not immune. Just letting you know, it is a more narrow tree. Another spruce I like is Norway spruce. Now, Norway spruce can get the same diseases. Not saying they're immune. They're just less susceptible. And those trees get very big and wide-spreading. You know, they can easily get 40 foot wide.
That's huge.
Over many years.
Yeah, that's huge.
Many years. Mm-hmm. But that's a possible screen. Of course, white pine, though you've got deer pressure and they can nibble on it.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks, John. Good luck with that. We've got Jamie from... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to add one last comment. Another spruce that is very difficult to find, but I know Bailey's has grown it, and that is the Meyer spruce. That one is more resistant to deer and because it's pretty prickly, but it is also much more disease resistant. But that one's a harder one to find.
Okay. Okay, let's go to the phones then. Jamie in Algoma, you have a question for us?
Yes. A few days ago, we rescued 3 beautiful Boston ferns from the local yard waste center. And they've, until we can get them to a greenhouse type set up in Green Bay, have been sitting in my garage in Algoma. Do they have any chance whatsoever of making it? Have they been too shocked by the cold already?
What was the plant? I missed that.
Boston fern.
Yes.
Boston what?
Fern.
Fern. Oh, okay. Oh, God. Yeah, that will not tolerate the cold at all. That is an interior plant. If it's been subjected to temperatures below 30, they're done. Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah, it's a tropical, not hardy.
Yeah. I mean, I put mine outside this summer, and they did really great. And I think it got down probably into the 40s when I brought them in, but it's doing just fine. But yeah, tropical plant. They don't like it cold. So, yep. Do you have a question for Laura? Give us a call. The lines are open, 800-642-1234. We did get an email from Neil in Sussex. They have a hawthorn that died in their yard from some type of rust. They cut it down to a stump in a few weeks ago, and wondering if this tree will grow back from the stump, and what bush would you recommend to replace it?
Okay, the hawthorn, if it's cut all the way back, it won't come back from the stump. They're not ones to coppice. That's a term, forestry term, where some trees you cut them back and they'll sprout from the base. Hawthorns, to my knowledge, don't do that very readily. And if you have a rust problem, you probably have some type of juniper in your yard, and junipers. Some junipers, especially our native eastern red cedar, that one serves as the secondary host for rust diseases. The rust disease spends half of its life cycle on our native junipers and the other half of its life cycle on things like hawthorns or crabapples or quince. As a replacement, are you looking for a tree or are you looking for a shrub?
Well, this was an email, and he said that the question was, what bush would you recommend to replace it with?
Well, there's many, many different shrubs that you can use to replace it. Since you have rust in your yard, I would probably avoid most things in the rose family. Even amelanchers can get rust. So I would probably steer away from that aspect. I mean, you could go with lilacs, you could go with forsythia, you could go with weigelia, viburnums. There's lots of viburnums out there that are very nice plants. One of my favorites is Korean spice viburnum.
Oh, yes.
That one has extremely fragrant flowers in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there's some suggestions for you, Neil, so thank you very much. We've got Mary on the phone, and she's in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hello?
Mary, are you there?
I was wondering, what?
Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Oh, I think she's breaking up. I believe her question was about tissue culture, and is it still used in woody ornamentals?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Micropropagation is a form, of tissue culture, but micropropagated plants, oh, yes. A lot of plants are propagated that way. And micropropagation, if those viewers that don't, or listeners don't know, it's a propagating plants in aseptic culture. It's done in a lab. Under a laminar flow hood, a special type of equipment. It's very sterile. It's not something a homeowner is going to do.
Right.
You need very expensive equipment to do it. And there are companies that do it.
Okay. Thanks for that question, Mary. We've got another email from Nancy. And wondering how do Norway spruces grow in southern Wisconsin?
They grow. there's some beautiful ones at the UW-Madison Arboretum. They get big, and that's the thing. If people use those in their yard, realize they get humongous, and not to plant it next to a house.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be at least 60 feet away from a house because they just get huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good thing to, the Arboretum's a really good place, isn't it, to go out and check out size and color and all that stuff. So
Yeah. In effect, with the snow on the ground, the evergreen collection in the Longnecker Horticulture Gardens that is up on the hill look beautiful.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, we always forget about going in the winter, don't we? But lots to see still. Erin emailed with a question. She has a serviceberry that is in danger of growing into a deck structure. Can she prune a foot off the top?
Okay, it's growing into a deck structure, so I imagine that was the deck above.
Sounds like it.
Above.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. Yeah, they should never be planted underneath a deck. Yeah, you can take some foliage off the top, but it will really ruin the form. I would suggest if there's any way of moving the shrub, if it's an established one, that's going to be a lot of work. If you cut branches from the top off, realize the form will be ruined. And not only that, we grow it for its wonderful flowers as well as very, very tasty fruit. Service berries are native to Wisconsin. They produce red fruit in June, but wait till it turns purple. That's when they're ripe, and that's when they're sweet.
Okay.
The birds and robins will eat it. And one last thing before we end today is if anybody has any questions, please contact your county extension agent for questions. They're there to answer your homeowner-related questions.
For sure, and they do a wonderful job, and that's just,
yes, they do.
Yep, look at the extension in your county. We've got one last call here from Karen in La Crosse. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I actually have two questions. The first one is I have a Boston fern plant that I keep indoors. It's actually decades old. It was cuttings from my grandma to my mom to me.
Okay.
But what's the best way to care for them through the winter? And then my second question is I have a potted, I think it's a blue spruce or the Black Hill spruce. That I'm going to use for my Christmas tree. It's outside right now. I'll bring it in for like 2 weeks at Christmas and then put it back.
Karen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but if we don't stop now, we won't be able to answer the question. So go ahead. Go ahead, Laura. Couple minutes.
Okay, real quick. The Boston fern needs bright, indirect light, so a bright window. That don't let them dry out. Boy, do they shed a lot of little leaves off of it. They like high humidity, so misting them or even putting it in a sunny bathroom would be great, but don't let them dry out at all. Regarding the spruce, the potted plant, that's great. If you want to use it as your Christmas tree, you'll bring it inside. Make sure to put a saucer on the bottom so it doesn't ruin your floor. Keep it watered indoors. Its watering needs will increase in a warm room, and don't let it sit in its water.
Okay. Same thing for the fern, too. Don't let it sit in the water. I had problems with that. Thank you, Karen. And with the 30 seconds we have left, can you tell us what the Latin name for the burning bush is? Somebody wanted to know.
Sure. Euonymus elatus, and it's Euonymus, and the second term is elatus or elata, A-L-A-T-U-S.
Okay.
And that's burning bush, and that's an invasive plant in Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, thank you, Laura, so much. Again, we found out so much information. Really appreciate you being with us.
Sure. No problem. I enjoy doing that.
Great. We've been talking with Laura Gell. She is a professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. And make sure that you go to our program note at WPR.org/Larry to give us, to take the survey. Just look below the program note and you'll see take survey. Just click on that and we'll appreciate your feedback. Stay well and enjoy your weekend.